Hey, buddy.
Hey, man.
How are you?
I'm good. Go, go, go. Doing things, getting things done, feeling healthy. March, starting a reset, which is just a dietary reset. Day one, because I started on a Monday. I'll finish in April. But, yeah.
What's a dietary reset?
Oh, you know, I don't want to bore everyone, but I'm just getting rid of everything that's good and fun to eat.
That's a tough one.
Yeah. No added sugar.
Yeah.
Drinking alcohol, that's been done for a while. So that's not a problem, but no dairy right now. All organic, not too much fruit, as much veggies as I want.
Wow.
And some other restrictions too, but yeah, gonna give it a go. An act of discipline, more than anything.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Well, report back. This is, of course, the Photographer Mindset Podcast. I'm your co-host, one of them, Seth Macy.
And I'm your hungry and cranky co-host, Aaron Maness.
This is a show that talks about photography and mindset. Often leans more on one than the other in certain episodes. Sometimes it's a perfect blend. Mm-hmm. But, you know, today we had on Dave Sanford, who we're fortunate enough to call a friend at this point. This is his fourth time on the podcast. Dave works for the NHL. He shot a lot of Stanley Cup finals. He's done an Olympics before. He's an incredible wildlife and nature photographer as well, on top of many things. A lot of people know him for his Liquid Mountain series, the photos of the giant waves in Lake Erie. Very talented, very nice guy, doing a lot of cool stuff. But today was very raw. It was a raw episode. Dave has had some struggles the last few years and struggled a lot of it in silence. He's doing a lot better now, and we figured it would be a great episode to have him on and just kind of tell his story in hopes that it may inspire people to build a protocol for themselves that improves their mental health, maybe seeks them to look for help, support systems, whether that's, you know, physically with a doctor or mentally. So I guess I invite people to listen out for, or I guess to make note of a story where someone who we all look up to in this community, who's very talented, who seems like everything is just together and was not doing so hot. And life isn't about the highest of highs that we see on Instagram. It's often the lowest of lows that we don't get to see. And I think this episode shows how human we can really all be. And Dave went from the lowest low over the course of 3-4 years to doing much better by taking action, by, I guess, really saving himself. And he mentions in this episode how much that's improved his photography as well. Is there anything to add, Aaron?
Yeah, I think we did a nice job of sitting back and letting him tell his story. I wanted him to be able to share it all succinctly. And I think we gave him the space to do so. So enjoy his tales. I think his, you know, view and his ability to see the world and see so many things, is special. And he recognizes that, there's a huge theme of gratitude within this episode. I love Dave. He's become a very close friend in terms of the Instagram world. We've never met in the flesh, but he's just one of those people that sticks out and has always been such a kind and warm heart. It's very easy to tell if you've ever talked with Dave, even through the DMs. He's a special guy. So we're so glad he's doing better. There's some scary times, and just proud of him, I guess, for sharing openly.
Yeah, well said, well said. Well, without further ado, quick word from the sponsor and then right into our episode with Dave Sanford.
Hey, this is Aaron from the Photographer Mindset Podcast, and I know it can be overwhelming choosing a print company. Luckily, I was introduced to White Wall by Seth, and in all honesty, I'll never look back. I've been wanting to continue my national park wall for a long time, but I couldn't settle on a printing company, and that's when Seth suggested White Wall, and they delivered. The quality is amazing, The shipping speed was unbelievably fast, and the ease of their website was straight up impressive. I especially love their image optimization tool that adds a subtle amount of pop to your prints. Definitely check out Whitewall for all of your printing needs.
Well, Dave Sanford, how long have we been friends now?
Like 4 years now.
Wow, time flies.
Yeah. Time is flying. This is your, what,
fourth time on the show? So you're averaging once per year. That's a pretty good, it's good for us, I would say, to get Dave Sanford on the show once a year. Does it make you feel impostery when people say stuff like that?
Sometimes, yes.
Like, ooh, the Dave Sanford. I mean, you are the Dave Sanford, but...
I mean, even though there's a Dave Sanford photographer in Australia and London, England, and Vancouver, and here.
Oh, so you have competition.
Apparently. but no, I do. I feel honored to be on the show that many times. It's pretty special.
And we keep having you back because every time it's a good conversation. You have so much knowledge of... the world of cameras, life experience, and we chatted on the phone.
Are you calling me old?
Yes. We chatted on the phone for the first time in months. When was it? Like 2 months ago? We usually catch up maybe 2-3 times a year. And you kind of let me know that some shit had been going on, huh? And we're going to talk about photography today, of course. Yeah. But you and I, we came to the conclusion, I think we had a meeting with Aaron as well, that it might be cool to kind of share what's been up with you the last 3 years. 3 years, is that right?
More than 3 years.
More than 3 years. And just sometimes you don't really know what's going on with people. And maybe we can loop it into lots of different topics and, you know, how, I don't want to allude too much to it because it's your story, but going from a really low place to where you're at now, how empowering that can be.
For sure.
Where do you think the best place to start? Am I throwing you right into the story right away? Is that all right?
That's all right. I don't mind. Like I say, I told you last week, I'm happy to talk about it because, you know, if people can, I guess, hear and understand that somebody else has, you know, gone through something maybe similar to what they're going through, it might help them. And if this potentially helps one person, whether it's their mental health, physical health, whatever it may be, I've learned that in the last couple of years by talking about it, it has helped people because I've had people come forward to me with their stories and telling me that they in turn have gotten help and gotten the medical attention they needed and or got checked out and found out they were okay, which is the best news. So, I don't mind talking about it.
Okay. Well, what's interesting about your story is that, and this this happens to so many people, is that physical ailment spirals into mental ailment, right?
Correct.
And a lot of times, I don't know if this was your case, but there's a lot of suffering in silence.
Yeah. And that was one of my biggest mistakes, suffering in silence for far too long.
So where's the best place kind of to start? With what was going on with you at the time and all with the goal of, what would the goal be? Reducing stigmas?
Reducing stigmas. Yeah, for sure. Reducing stigmas. Just, you know, I guess looking in the mirror and taking better care of yourself type thing.
Right.
And before whether it be mental or physical.
Right. And it's, it ties into because it's so it someone can go to your page, right? Whether it's your website or all the articles written about you or your Instagram, you know, tons of accolades, stunning photos, traveled the world, and things weren't all right. You know, we forget that. Yeah. So
you just mentioned are like, that's just the world we live in. This digital world showcases the highlights of life most of the time and not the lowlights and, you know, the stuff in the trenches that we have to go through in order to achieve those highlight reels, I guess.
Right. So I guess part of this episode is celebrating some lowlights, the humanity behind it. Obviously we're not going to make this whole episode or try not to make it like a downer. It's not meant to be that. It's meant to be real life, with people mm-hmm. in the community who we care about and who we look up to, such as yourself. So I'm going to give the floor to you. And let's kind of maybe just continue our conversation casually that we started 2 months ago in hopes of, you know, helping people, like you said.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I were to turn back the clock a little bit to give our listeners an idea of what we are talking about here, 2019, 2020, just before the pandemic hit, I felt like my career was, you know, I was riding a high for a number of years. It was the best of both worlds, my wildlife and my professional sports, mostly the National Hockey League. And the pandemic hit, and all of a sudden things very quickly started to unravel, and I kind of spiraled downward starting in 2020. And I guess I hit rock bottom in 2023, about a year ago this time. And I continued to try on the surface, like we're talking about, to pretend like I was okay. I didn't tell people what was actually going on inside of me physically until May of 2023 last year. And then mentally, I told people about a year earlier. It took me about a year to understand I was dealing with depression and anxiety. And then it took me another year to actually open up to people like family, friends, and eventually, I guess, the general public that I was dealing with, you know, poor mental health and those struggles. And as you mentioned before, a lot of that stemmed from my physical health. Another big source of that stemmed from my career coming to a grinding halt, essentially. Like COVID, some people flourished in COVID for their careers, and I unfortunately was one of those people who did not. Everything that I did either depended on travel or, you know, depended on crowds on the sports side of things. So, you know, within about a 3 to 4 week period of spring of 2020, when, you know, lockdowns took, effect, I'd lost just about every job opportunity I had moving forward into 2022. So that alone would be enough to cause someone a mental breakdown, you know?
For sure. Right.
Mm-hmm. Let alone what I was dealing with inside. So to get to that point, so what I ended up dealing with was a epididymal cyst, which is a cyst in my scrotum. Terrible place to have a cyst for a guy. For lots of reasons.
Right.
But when you don't know what's happening, it's a horrible feeling. And because of COVID and the medical system breaking down and everything, I couldn't get checked. So I didn't know what I was dealing with for sure. Then there's the physical element of that and the embarrassment that comes with it. So to really rewind, I suffered an injury while wakeboarding back in about 2009 or 2010. Landed on a jump and landed kind of ass first, testicles first. Super sore, bruised, everything. A little while after that, I saw a doctor because I felt a lump. And that lump, I was told then, was there's don't worry about it, it's okay. And we're talking a lump that's smaller than the size of a pea. But mm-hmm. nonetheless, it was a lump. Mm-hmm. So I had everything looked at and everything was good. Just leave it alone. It may go away. It may never get any bigger. So fast forward to like 2019, started to notice a bit of growth. And we're talking maybe the size of a pea or a little bit bigger now. And then that got me concerned. I went and got checked again, found out that it was still the same, just grew a little bit, but not enough that they thought it would require any surgery or anything like that. So I continued to leave it. And then COVID hit. And then from 2020 through 2022, it consistently grew. And I don't want to gross out our listeners and everything here, but I mean, it grew to an embarrassing size. And
you can be as realistic as you want, my friend. This is life.
So it is life. And like I say, I'll put it all out there. Like, you know, eventually we're talking like Super Bowl size to golf ball size to pool cue ball size. And it impacted a lot of things. It impacted my physical activity, you know, everything. So I tried to get this dealt with, but couldn't because it was considered an elective surgery. It wasn't anything, that was real cause for concern. But as it started to grow and the physical anxiety, the way anxiety kind of impacted my body physically, I started to go down that path of thinking like, this has gotten worse. This must be cancerous. And maybe it's cancer spreading throughout my body because I had pains all through my stomach and my gut and in my side and down into my groin. And it was just super uncomfortable. The actual cyst itself, I didn't have pain in, but just this real discomfort. And like I say, this high level of embarrassment, like for 4 years, I the only thing way I could sort of hide it was if I wore black, wore longer shirts, wore compression shorts that are actually the only ones that would actually kind of hide it were these Under Armour heat compression shorts. And when you're wearing those and it's like 35 Celsius or 90 to 100 Fahrenheit, it's not comfortable in the summertime at all. Mm-hmm. It became an issue going traveling through airports and lighting things up like a Christmas tree and embarrassing secondary checks and things like that. Like it really had an impact in so many elements of my life. It caused me to have to drop out of the Winter Games in Beijing, the Olympic Winter Games in Beijing. It caused me to cease work in the expedition field, going to the polar regions, things like that, because I couldn't go away not knowing exactly what was wrong with me other than there was something seriously wrong. As we move forward, like I say, things continued to grow, get worse. My mental health just continued to spiral with all these like wondering, you know, what was happening. Even in 2020, I working the bubble in the National Hockey League out in Edmonton. And I remember after the game sitting in the stands at like 2:30 in the morning. And I just broke down. I started sobbing because I thought I was dying. I thought that I had photographed my last Stanley Cup final of my career because there was something serious, so seriously wrong with me just from how I felt inside head to toe. And then that obviously wasn't the case. I thankfully have photographed a few more since then and lots of other things. But in 2022 at the Stanley Cup final, ironically enough, I contracted COVID and I had it pretty bad. I was sequestered to my hotel room for a week in the States and had to actually stay in the States for 10 days total. And within about a month and a half to 2 months after I had got COVID, we've heard so much about people with underlying conditions and how it impacts those things. So for me, that pool cue ball size cyst, it was almost like it was on steroids and it just continued to grow to the point where I had like an orange size cyst or a grapefruit, probably somewhere between a grapefruit and a friggin', you know, 5-pin bowling ball. Like,
wow.
It was extremely uncomfortable, extremely embarrassing. So in the latter half of 2022, I started to get some more tests done. I got like starting with blood work just to see, you know, early blood work to see if there's any risk of cancer. And I was lined up for a what scan? I'm just
really blank.
An MRI. Thank you. But that wasn't until May of 2023. So I had like 7 or 8 months to wait until this MRI to tell me, you know, kind of for sure whether things had changed from benign to, you know, to anything worse. So, but the good thing was from about December of 2022, moving forward, I was tested for, you know, cancer, heart disease, leukemia, kidney disease, diabetes, all these things. And all these tests came back negative, you know, sort of one at a time. And every negative result kind of helped me chip away at my poor mental health. So, you know, it kind of had a little bit of that going for me. And then a year ago this time, back in February of 2023, things really unraveled again. My cat, as a lot of people who follow me know, Ollie, he passed away, and he was like my best buddy. And that was really hard for me to take. And within about 3.5 to 4 weeks of Ollie dying, I had numbering in the double digits people in my family and friends circle who passed away over that period of time. So I kind of had this little reset, and then I'm like, thank God I did, because I really unraveled, like I say, a year ago this time. And still not knowing, you know, all of those answers as to what was going on with me. So I really struggled mentally, you know. And as I say, a year before that, I had opened up publicly. You know, I felt my family, I should tell my family what was going on, but I never told anybody about the physical element of what was happening with me. It was just the mental health issue and talking about, you know, failed relationship, you know, all these failures with work, things falling apart, not being able to go out into the field to get new work, and sort of just a whole mess of things that, you know, were part of my poor mental health and anxiety, but not the biggest piece of the pie. So again, I'm kind of jumping a bit back and forth here, but again, got to about April of last year. And then that's when the anxiety really took over, and I started to suffer what I thought were either strokes or heart attacks. I had 9, and it turned out I had 9 panic attacks during about a month long stretch or so. And so I was, you know, put in for all kinds of different heart disease, heart arteries, and what's the one with all the stickers? I'm drawing a blank again. ECG. Yeah, EKGs. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever they could do. And essentially, again, everything came back negative. Everything pointed to stress and anxiety. So it was about, this time last year, March, end of March, I started to look in the mirror a little bit more. And one day I literally did look in the mirror. I just suffered a panic attack, the second last one I had. And I broke down big time. And I was looking back at the mirror, and I was like, you know, I don't even know who the fuck you are. Like I was that low. And I was just like, whoever you are though, you need help. And I'm literally saying this out loud as I'm staring in the mirror. And I came in and into the room that I'm in now, and I started looking up therapists, and within a matter of hours I was connected to a therapist, and the next day I was talking to a therapist, and a few days after that I started journaling, and I can thank you, Seth, and in large part to that, because you and my buddy James Harris I grew up with were kind of influences for me that way. And I started meditation, and I'm now, come this March 27th, assuming I meditate every day between now and then, it'll be a full year's worth, 366 days, since it was a leap year, of meditation. Wow. It's become a huge part of my life, and it's probably made the biggest difference in my mental health, aside from getting, you know, better physically. So I really finally, like I say, it took hitting rock bottom to realize that I needed a lot of help, and I needed it from more than one place. I started taking medication. You know, and the tough thing was too, for almost a year, because of the situation with my chest and not knowing if it was my heart and whatnot, I was told no physical activity, which I couldn't really do anyway with a friggin' grapefruit between my legs. So,
right.
It, you know, so I did put on weight, unfortunately, and that part has been difficult, but I've been cleared to resume physical activity and have, and feeling a lot better as I'm slowly getting, you know, myself into shape. But all those other things I just talked about were all little pieces of the pie that I needed, you know, to help my anxiety and my depression and everything. And so when May arrived last year and I had my first MRI done, it was a real anxious few weeks waiting for those results, but they came back, you know, negative. Everything was still benign according to the test. And I was very grateful as well to have some people in the medical field that I that I've dealt with for a number of years, and that kind of helped speed up the process to get me in to see a urologist who I dealt with. He did a kidney transplant for myself and my sister. I donated her a kidney 20 years ago. So we had a long-standing relationship. And anyway, that, you know, helped get me, again, in better mental health, because I knew that, all right, I'm seeing somebody. There is a light at the end of the tunnel here, you know, assuming things don't change. So I finally, in August, I got in to see my urologist, and we were able to get another MRI, and you know, I got all the final results from my heart tests and everything back, and it was like, okay, you're good to go for surgery. We've got a plan. We have a date. So that was set up for November 20th. And I had surgery then, and everything went well. They removed the cyst. It was massive. It was like 6.5 inches across by like 4.5 mm-hmm. inches.
Wow.
Like a little Nerf football, pretty much.
You didn't get to take it home, did you?
You know, I so wanted to.
Like,
exactly. Like, put it in a big ass mason jar and, like,
yeah,
epoxy. You know, like, in, they do up in Yukon, where it's like you do the shot and you kiss touch the toe to your lips. Oh. Like, I could have done that with the cyst, but I blew it, and I totally,
now people
I just
are throwing
wanted to
up.
See it.
Yeah,
I know. I just wanted
we
to
had
see
him,
it.
We had him at the edge.
Hope you didn't just eat lunch.
So it was, you know, the surgery was day surgery. I was probably in the hospital for about 15 hours, and I came out of that surgery feeling horrible, because I always do come out of surgery feeling horrible. It was my 8th or 9th operation in my life.
Wow.
So, I just don't do well coming out of the, you know, being put under, and then I was on the, you know, pain medication for 5 or so days afterwards. So about 10 days later, I started to feel like, okay, I'm coming around here. I feel like I've turned a corner. So this is around December, you know, first week of December sometime. And to wrap this kind of up, I ended up waking up one day and I thought I was hit by a Mack truck, and I went in back into the hospital. I was told it was inflammation and things contracting and kind of wanting to move back into place. Was prescribed anti-inflammatories that kind of leveled me off until just about Christmas. But then right before Christmas, I started to feel like crap, and like really like crap. And I ended up kind of battling through it over Christmas. And then I was supposed to go to Seattle for an assignment on December 29th. And I was determined I was going. Like, I've always been that way. Like, you know, I've dragged myself to so many events. After my second last surgery, I remember having somebody take me to the rink so I could, you know, go on crutches and a leg brace and still shoot, you know, like, I'd never like to miss what I do. So anyhow, it took me forever to pack. It took 2 days, and I was just out of breath and had to rest, and it was horrible. And like, I don't know how the hell I'm going to do this. And I called a couple friends that were nurses, and called my editor. And I was like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, this might be kind of stupid of me. And this is like 7 or 8 hours before I had to get on a plane to go to Seattle. My flight was at 6 a.m. I woke up at about 3:30 a.m. and I was like, I'm getting ready to leave to go to the airport. And I was like, this is stupid. And I went to Emerge at the hospital. And basically, they told me in Emerge and my other doctors that I saw, had I got on that plane, I probably wouldn't have come home. I ended up in the hospital with a serious infection. In that last kind of 12 hours, my scrotum, unfortunately, it was so badly infected that it just started to swell like the last couple of hours, like crazy, to what it bigger than it was before my first surgery. And then they discovered I had a clot in my lung, in my left lung. I had two clots in my right leg and one in my left leg. So I was in a lot of pain. It was, you know, I ended up being in the hospital for a week at that point. And December 30th, I had an emergency procedure because I was scheduled for surgery the next day, but they ended up doing emergency through the night because everything ruptured. I'll spare details of that. But it was pretty scary. I mean, it's horrific when you're bleeding out like that and wondering, am I going to friggin' bleed to death here? Had surgery that night. And like I say, I spent a week in hospital and then spent the next, I got out of the hospital like January 6th or 7th. And then they didn't close the incision. They left it open and I was having it packed by a nurse, gauze over it and everything up until 10 days ago, maybe. And that incision is actually still opened as we speak here, February or March 4th.
Don't get any ideas just because it's a video podcast, Dave.
Yeah. If you're listening on Spotify, you can see what we've been staring at for the last 30 minutes on YouTube.
It's very minimal now. It is like, we're talking like only a millimeter or two, but it is still technically opened. But I was cleared back on January 16th or so to resume physical activity. I left January 18th to go on assignment up to Yellowknife for 5-6 days, and then did a bunch of NHL assignments. I basically was on the road until last week. I feel the best I have in 4 years. That's awesome. Like I feel like I have a new lease on life. I know things, you know, in the end, some may say, oh, it was just a cyst at the end, but I didn't know what it was or wasn't for the longest time. Hence all the testing that I ended up going through, because they didn't know as well. And when you don't know and you have those unknowns and you keep that inside the way that I did and not tell anybody for years, literally, not my family, there was basically two people on this planet who had an idea of what I was suffering through, and that was it. And but one of the reasons I didn't want to talk about it or tell people was because I didn't know myself. I didn't have answers as to what was going on until the end of May, when I finally got those MRI results back, and that it was still a cyst that was benign. And that's when I elected to tell my family and some friends, and that was a huge weight off of my chest at that point. And yeah, for the last 6 months, things have just gotten better and better and better. Back in the end of September, I was able to do a trip to Australia for an assignment and see my family that I have over there and friends, and spent most of the fall on the road before I went into surgery. So it was sort of like knowing that, like I say, the light was at the end of the tunnel, and chipping away at that poor mental health really helped me in that last quarter of the year type thing. It was still a pain to travel like that in that condition and everything, but I managed to do it and do it, like I say, with a much better mindset because, as I say, you know, just telling people, being more open about it, knowing there was a plan and, all of that really, really helped me. So, and then as I say now, getting the, you know, the okay from my surgeon and ready to resume life and everything, it's like, it just feels phenomenal. It feels so good to wear normal boxers again and jeans and different shorts and, you know, not worry about going swimming and, you know, just things we all kind of take for granted, riding a bike and you know, and as I say, I now, especially from January till now, going through and planning for the future again with my assignment work and going out on these assignments just with a completely different mindset and being able to just focus on my task at hand and not, is something going to go wrong while I'm out in the field or, you know, being out of the country or whatever it might be, you know, I mean, all those things kind of lingered over me for the longest time and or prevented me from going these places. So, as I came forward with, you know, my mental health issues and depression and anxiety, and then my physical health issues, what was so incredible was the feedback that flooded into me, whether it was phone calls, people popping over, messages from people I don't even know through social media, through emails, things like that, about how they've suffered through their own things and everything looked like it was, you know, all rosy on the cover for me, and it sure as hell wasn't. And it was sort of nice for other people to hear that, you know, and I get that, like, you know, the grass always looks greener on the other side type thing. And we don't know what, you know, what trials and tribulations a person might be going through to keep that grass nice and green on the surface. So, people who went and had their physical health checked and have gotten their own help and, you know, whether with their mental health, like, it was amazing to hear by sharing my story with people, it was helping others. So if this podcast right here helps even one person, this time was so worth it to share this with people, because it wasn't the easiest thing to talk about. It wasn't easy to talk about at all. So I didn't for the longest time, but as time's gone on, I can look back on it and learn my own lessons from it. And hopefully others can as well. And yeah. And I don't see a therapist anymore. My therapist dropped me because he thought he couldn't do anything for me. You know, and it's like, that feels like graduating at the top of your class type thing with the highest marks, you know. Yeah. It was so nice to actually have him say that to me, you know. That was earlier this fall, last fall. So yeah. And like I say, it's helped me with my work, my workflow, getting things accomplished again, becoming physically active again, just feeling much more myself. I know I'm never going to be the same person I was in the beginning of 2020, but I feel like I've learned a hell of a lot since then, you know, and I'm maybe a better version of, you know, the happy person that I was back in 2020.
I have so many questions.
Yeah.
me too.
No jokes?
Well,
I thought you were going to have so many jokes.
If you wouldn't mind putting pants back on, that'd be...
Yeah, it'd be great.
Excuse
humor
me.
Humor is good medicine, right? First of all, before I even get into anything, I got to say thanks for being so honest.
Yeah.
It's very difficult in today's world to be 100% honest. It really is. Everyone's trying to put their best foot forward. Nobody really wants to showcase the not so fun stuff, the nasty stuff, the here's me at my lowest stuff, because it doesn't make sense to do so in like our primal brain, but there is value in it. So I commend you and your courage there for sharing that with everyone who's listening.
And I appreciate the people who have listened to this point, because I'm sure there's people who are like, ah.
So just to be general right off the bat, before I get into more nuanced stuff, Aaron has a ton of things, I'm sure, to say. So
yeah, joke number one, go.
No,
like you said, laughter is the best medicine.
What is the takeaway, you know, for you? What, like, looking back, what is the I want to refrain from saying lesson because this wasn't self-induced. No. It wasn't like a mistake or anything, but what's the reflection look like?
For me, I think it was the biggest thing is I wish I had the courage to do something sooner. And I wish I had the boldness to make more noise from 2020 through 2022 before it got to the point that it did. But I was too chicken shit. I was the ostrich burying my head in the sand for a long time. Like, if I don't see it, you know, it's not there. So I blame myself for that. And I don't want to be like that ever again, especially with something this potentially serious. And it was really serious. I mean, it had such a massive impact on my mental health. And I'm also talking about my mental health. Like,
right. Mental health, or you can bury the physical ailment, right?
Yeah.
And it's harder to bury something that's so visual, but we bury the things bothering us in our head every day.
Exactly. And I buried it for a long time. I didn't know, I honestly, before 2020, I didn't know when somebody talked about depression and anxiety, I couldn't relate. I couldn't have that level of empathy that I have now because I honestly never dealt with it. I feel I've went through most of my life so blessed to not have to deal with that. Like, stress to me was like, okay, whatever. It's like, it didn't impact me. The highest level of stress that I, you know, whether it was medical stuff with family members or, you know, death around me, my job or whatever it was, I was cool as a cucumber. And then, like I say, that changed in 2020. And it took me a long time to understand what it was that I was feeling. I just didn't know because I'd never experienced these types of things before. And then when months and months passed before I realized, okay, yeah, I'm depressed. And then the anxiety, you know, I started to realize, okay, this is what anxiety looks like. And kind of talking to a few more people and reading and learning more about it and understanding, okay, this is what I'm dealing with. So it took me a long time to learn what it was that was going on with me, you know, internally before. And then it took me, like I say, another year and change before I actually was ready to openly admit that this was what I was dealing with. I just stuffed it down and thought, I can do this.
Is the resistance to admitting, what's the resistance? Is it shame?
I think there's a difference between shame and embarrassment myself. Okay. And I want to say I was more embarrassed. And I was afraid of, like, I guess the stigma of, like, all right, if I'm depressed or something, and then I got to go on medication. Like, I so did not want to go on medication. You know, growing up, it was like, there was a big stigma about that. And I guess I let that, you know, stick with me too much. And honestly, I don't notice anything with the medication that I'm on. And it's been, you know, almost a year, I think, now. And I pop one pill a day and I don't notice anything. I don't notice any negative side effects. I just know that combined with everything else I've done, I feel like I did going into 2020.
And that's what I wanted to mention too. It's not just, I'm going to pop a pill and treat my symptoms of feeling sad and anxious and depressed. It's, I'm going to use this as a crutch while I build my protocol. My protocol being my journaling, part of my protocol being my meditation. It's not just I feel better, so I don't have to do anything else. It sounds like you decided, you made a conscious choice to feel better and perform better and have a more fulfilling life. Like, hey, I'm going to invest some time into actions that are going to calm my mind or raise my stress threshold moving forward.
Yeah. I made conscious life choices. You know, these are things I definitely was not doing a few years ago. You know, even just socially drinking, like I gone 8-9 months without a drop. Sometimes I go 2 or 3 months without a drop, and then it's like, all right, I'm going to have a drink or two.
You're more in control.
Yeah. You know, it was the same with cannabis. I stopped smoking cannabis a year ago. Like I leaned on that for a crutch through the beginning of all this, and it wasn't doing me any good.
How do you feel being more straight edge? Because I'm a similar story. I quit drinking. I quit weed. Like, and I just feel so much better. I'm not saying I'm not trying to poo-poo it. I mean, I feel like if you're in control, that's a different story.
Yeah, and I felt like I was using those as a crutch, as an excuse, like, oh, I need this to sleep. And it was doing the complete opposite.
Right.
You know, I feel way more alive, way more electric, I guess you would say. Like I do, I have energy again. I, you know, it took a good month and a half. You know, it was around May of last year where all of a sudden I noticed like, holy shit, I just ran up the stairs. Or, you know, I had pep in my step again, things like that. Like I began to actually sleep for 8, 9, 10, 12 hours, like I always used to be able to do, and wake up rested and ready to tackle things. And, my creative side began to flow again.
No doubt.
More than, you know, more like I was used to it, being. And, yeah, there's a lot of things I do. I just feel overall lighter, if that makes sense. And it, like I say, and that was, like I say, for me at this point in my life or whatever, I wanted to make some changes, and it took a little bit of effort, but once I got into that, it's like, yeah, I'm really enjoying this and really enjoying the way I'm living my life again. And, not regretting, some of the decisions I made in the past and using these crutches to, I guess, help me bury my head in the sand for a while and not want to face what I know I needed to face.
Mm-hmm. I'm a big advocate too for filling your toolbox with things that can help you handle life's next biggest stressor. Cause it's going to come for you. It's going to come for me. It's going to come for Aaron. And it's not helpful to be trying to fill your toolbox with holistic things like journaling, like a nice bath, like meditation when things are in the shit. That's why, like, I'm a big advocate for let's work on those things and build that protocol when we're feeling great. And I'm not saying that that's like a mistake on your part. Obviously the medical thing and the mental thing go so hand in hand, right? But it took getting to the lowest of low for you to realize the pain was severe enough that you realized when you were looking in the mirror, like, I got to do something for myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody else was going. I mean, yeah, nobody else is. People can take you by the hand, but you have to do the work. People can give you the tools, but you have to put in the work. You have to put in the effort.
Right. And you can work to build that toolbox, right?
Yeah. And I'm very grateful for an incredible support system from my family to my friends here at home, my friends that I've made on the road, to the people in my social media community. Like, I had such a massive support network and still do. And I don't want to, you know, like, I just want to take a minute just to thank everybody that's been a part of that. And, like, you guys included, you guys were guys who checked in and, you know, just, you know, it doesn't take a lot, but all those little things, you know, help to those supports just keep piling up and piling up, and they're part of what helps raise you. And yeah, like you say, with meditation or journaling and things like that, it's not, you know, talking about those acts in themselves and actually doing them. I enjoy doing them. And I, you know, and sometimes you don't have as much time to invest in the moment in doing them, but I still do them. Mm-hmm. It's the biggest part of the benefit from those acts is, like you say, it's in those other times. It's the other 23 and a half hours of the day that, you know, or whether it's days, weeks later or whatever, and I'm in a situation and I can search within me to better get myself through that situation.
Right.
I have the tools now, I feel, versus say a year ago, I didn't have the right tools, or the tools were there, I just didn't know how to use them.
Right.
Or didn't want to use them. I don't know how you want to put it, but that's, now I'm grateful that I've got all these tools in my kit. And because when you're in that, you know, the lowest of low situation with your physical and mental health, that's the other thing too, is it can be paralyzing at times.
Right.
Like, and I never used to understand people say, oh, I can't get out of bed or I can't get off the couch. And I may not be able to explain it, but I can understand it now. Like, it's like this invisible way, like, you know, you've got shit to do, but I didn't care to do it, you know, like, and it would just pile up, and it did. It impacted my career. It impacted friendships, relationships. It ruined a lot of things in my life. And thankfully I've been able to repair some of those. And, like I say, I've, you know, to come full circle, or that's like, I've learned a big lesson, and that, like I say, if I dealt with this stuff differently from the onset, a lot of those things just would have been differently, you know?
Right. So having that
turned out differently,
having that insight without being regretful, I think is important to say.
Yeah.
Which you've done. But just to state that again.
For sure.
Aaron, go ahead.
Yeah. Wow. Again, thank you for sharing and being vulnerable. And I was very quiet because I was just giving you the space to get all of that out succinctly. But I do have so many thoughts and observations and questions. I'll just rattle off a few. I'm wondering with meditation. I mean, meditation, I teach meditation to little kids in school. And the one thing I say to them is, this is a practice. It's not a perfect, you're not going to be able to think about anything. More than anything, it's the practice of recognizing that you are thinking and bringing it back. So catching those thoughts. And I can't help to notice that you said that meditation was one of your favorite tools or your favorite practices to this day. And the pre-meditation and the pre-sort of knowing what was going on was a lot of thought about what could be going on. Is it cancer? Is it diabetes? Is it heart disease? Is it this? Is it, am I dying? Is it all the things that your brain can just go wild with? And I'm sure did. And I think the practice of meditation is kind of being able to catch yourself in those thoughts and saying, no, well, we don't know it's cancer. Let's be patient. Let's focus. Where am I right now? We're getting tests in a couple weeks. I don't need to think and go down this rabbit hole. I need to be back and present. And I think that's probably, if I'm guessing, what you were feeling and feeling so appreciative towards meditation because of that skill. Am I on to something there?
Yeah, you're 100% right, Aaron. Meditation, the practice of meditation, for me, the biggest thing that I've gotten out of it is being present. And like you say, not when my mind does go down that pathway into the future or the unknown, I know how to come back to my home base. And if it goes down that pathway again and again, I just know how to reel myself in and put myself into a calmer state. And as I say, more present in the moment. And it's improved my photography so much as well, especially with wildlife. Like, I've always had patience and I can spend hours and hours on days in a row out there all by myself, but it's allowed me to be so much more in tune with so many little things and the little signs, and just by being present, it's made me a better photographer. It's made me a better communicator when I'm with people one-on-one. And as they say, when your mind starts to go down these dark paths, I know how to reel it back in now. And that's been the biggest thing.
Yeah. You know, I think everyone hits these on a scale of 1 to 10, these ones or twos or threes of depression, depressing days, bad days. I'm in a funk. And if you're not careful, it can become a 4, a 5, a 6 pretty quickly. But I think that ability to be like, oh, I'm in a funk, and then look around in gratitude, or look around and take a minute and a breath or a walk or a step away from it, can be a lifesaver. It really can, if you have those tools in that practice. So anyone that's out there that's like interested in meditation, we can link some apps in the that I use that I like. I'm sure there's some that Seth used. Dave, if you want to share any that you're using, but just to get into it, it is a practice. It's a muscle. It takes a little bit of work, but you're able to really lean on it for a lot of things, a million different scenarios. I feel like it's so good. I think it saves so much time. Spending 20 minutes meditating saves countless minutes of needless worrying or needless just spiraling that you can just kind of get back from and keep doing what you're supposed to be doing or where you need to be. So
you're so right about that.
We'll definitely give that.
Yeah, it's like investing in your future.
Yeah, it is.
It really is. You know, and the biggest thing I find when I've spoken to people about it that I want to mention now is people say, oh, I don't have the time for it, or I don't have the right kind of mind to be able to sit there and empty it. And I'm like, you've already mentioned it. That's not what it's about. You're going to think of other things. Your mind is going to wander. It's training that muscle to, just like your physical muscles, to learn how to come back to that home base, you know. And as time goes on, you'll learn quicker and quicker, or what works best for you to get back to that home base, and working that what's the muscle called? There's a name for it now, and I'm drawing a total blank.
Well, I think just before meditation, this is personal. Before meditation for me, thoughts were me. Thoughts were who I am and me, and this is what's happening. With the practice of meditation over years, and I mean, I do it in the schools, I do it on my own, thoughts have become observed different pieces. And there's like a clear distinction. And I still sometimes can get caught in that cloud of thought and be in it, but it's easier to recognize and then say like, oh, what is true? What's a thought? What am I thinking? Like, just kind of separate it between me and what I'm thinking. And that ability, some people just might not have until you think about it and like really work at it, that thoughts are simply thoughts. They're not actual necessarily real events or things that are going to definitely happen. It's a lot of make-believe. And there's 90% of it you can get yourself back from and be like, I'm essentially just daydreaming. It's nothing. I'm thoughts adding come a and lot go. Of details. Yeah.
I learned early on. I mean, I used the Calm app, to get myself started. I took a 30-day, course with Jeff Warren on there, who actually is from Toronto, and I listened to it for 30 days. And then at the end of that 30 days, I did it again. And then again. So the first 90 days I did his 30-day course. And what Jeff said in the beginning of that was, look at your thoughts like you're sitting in the desert and there's nothing else going on. And all of a sudden the Greyhound bus comes by and it's just, you see it coming in the distance, and then you focus on it, and then you see it go off in the distance. And that's all your thoughts are. They're just like that Greyhound bus passing through. And if you choose to focus on it, if you choose to focus on it, then okay, you can, but you can learn, like you say, you can teach yourself. And I don't even want to say teach yourself, because like you say, it's like becomes muscle memory to learn how to let those thoughts come, to let them go. And then just be present with what you're involved with.
Yeah. And for me, starting off in active meditation, for me worked really well, which is you're doing something. So let's take a walk. You're meditating while walking for 30 minutes and you're literally just observing and thinking about what each foot feels like on the pavement and really keying into every foot press on the ground for the entire time. You will drift. You will wonder what's for dinner later, but it's a easy way to like, oh, I have to get back to the feet and what my feet feel like. Doing something active is a great way to train that sort of mental muscle because you have that home base that's less abstract than like just your home base. It's more of like my home base is my present moment is walking. I'm left, right, left, right. Oh, my heel hurts a little. Oh, my mm-hmm. right foot feels different. Like being very observant of what you're doing and oh, what's for dinner tonight while you're walking? Oh, I missed steps. I got to come back and think about it. And that's a really good way to train this, that sort of practice, that idea of, oh, there's a thought. All right, let's get back to present. And I think that's really important. The other thing. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I do a lot of that as well, Aaron. And yeah, meditation, and I've read a few books on it over the last year. Just, you know, for listeners who aren't familiar, who have wondered about it or thought it's not for me, meditation is so not what I thought it was. You know, it's not, like you say, there's so many different forms and types and ways to meditate mm-hmm. that all achieve the sort of that same goal. And for those people who think, yeah, I can't sit still for a long time, physical meditation, like you're just describing, is a perfect, you know, way to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Go ahead. Can I weigh in before we move on?
Yeah.
I had observing thoughts in my notes while you guys were talking. So I'm sitting here going, yeah. So mm-hmm. you guys encapsulated that beautifully. I think what's also important too, if people just really decide, hey, meditation's not for me, I think the goal is achieving stillness. Now, stillness isn't necessarily thinking of nothing. I think, for example, on a run, I'm concerned with my heart rate. In a cold bath, I'm concerned with surviving, right? When I'm out in the field shooting the elk rut, I'm my mind is one tracked. So finding practices that allow that can create a stillness, which is its own version of meditating, potentially beyond the traditional image of it, right? You're not thinking about your crippling divorce. You're not thinking about your money problems. You're not thinking about any of those things when you're doing these tasks. And I think that's kind of the point. It's trying to achieve a still brain, which is very difficult to do. But when you can get to that point, I think it ties beautifully into your nervous system and really helps you kind of not be constantly in that fight or flight mode when you don't need to be.
Very well said.
Yeah, well said. Well said, so, Seth.
I knew you were going to talk about running because I know what that's like.
I have to. Well Aaron mentioned.
Oh no, you're right though.
I'm not thinking about anything else other than what's my pace, what's mm-hmm. my, yep. what's this? Like to me, that's a meditation. The cold shower, it's friggin' freezing. I don't have time to think about anything else other than controlling my breath. Mm-hmm. Talk about a stressor. You want to get mm-hmm. used to stress? Turn the water ice cold and sit in there for 2 minutes and figure out how to survive. I guarantee you think about nothing else other than trying to get yourself together. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. And so,
shrinkage.
I'm not even worried about that. That's what we worry about that when we get out and we look in the mirror.
Yeah. And it's something that Dave's okay with these days. Shrinkage down there. Not expansion. Yes.
But my point being, these things raise thresholds of stress, right? Now when mm-hmm. real life kicks you in the nuts, there's my joke.
There it is.
One big one.
Kicks you in the nut. Yeah. You have an idea. I'm not saying it's pleasant. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be sad or upset or mm-hmm. visibly distraught in times of despair, but it prevents you from absolutely ceasing to function, right? We need to continue forward. We can't, there's people who count on us. You have family, even yourself. Like you need to be able to find a way to manage, to cope, right?
Yeah.
And I think everything you two just said kind of allude to building that practice.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So yeah. that was my first observation. My second observation, and it just hammers home, is man, is health the number one thing?
Yeah.
Being healthy and being okay and is the number, and if you ignore it, it'll get you. It'll get you eventually. Like same with meditation. If you can spend 20 minutes, 30 minutes a day being active, doing some, like making sure everything's working the way it should be, you are saving so much time and stress and mental stress and physical stress. And it just, I mean, talk about a moment of gratitude where in this moment I'm feeling pretty healthy. And pretty good with everything. And, you know, when it's so tough when you're not. Like, it's so, so tough when you're not. And anyone that's I don't want to say complaining. Again, I work with middle school kids. So my language is sometimes different because I deal with kids who are complaining about like boyfriend, girlfriends in seventh and eighth grade and how stressful it is, but they're as healthy as they probably will ever be. You know, like they're the epitome of health. They're so very healthy. And it's like, oh, like that's not stress. Like you're healthy. You should be so thankful that you're so healthy. And like, oh, my back kills. I'm 43 and like, I'm sitting here. You guys fine. You don't even have to stretch before you do anything. Like your health is great. And that is just the baseline of like everything else has to function around that. And I just feel like, I mean, hearing your story is about not ignoring things. Like being aggressive with questions, doctors, seeing someone, ask, figure it out so you don't have to wonder, so you don't have to go down tough roads that lead to really dark times. I've been there where it's like, I don't want to go to the doctor and ask about this thing, this mole or this growth. Like, I don't want the news. But if you don't, the options are, it might be nothing or it might be something that you are going to kick yourself that you didn't go earlier and ask about it. So, I mean, that was the 2x4 from your story that hit me in terms of like, don't underestimate health and make sure you're doing what you got to do to stay healthy. That way you can continue all the things, your creative passions, your relationships, your life, everything can keep on going at the best rate that it can.
Exactly. I don't have to look too far to remind myself of those things anymore. It's not that I took them for granted. I've been riddled with injury and health issues off and on my whole life. And, this one was just a little bit different and caught me differently and caught me at a time where, you know, it was hard to get checked out, you know? But then coming out of that, I almost found that when I was able to go and get checked out, I didn't, because I was in that mindset of like burying my head in the sand, you know? Mm-hmm. But without your health, it, you know, what have you got? Like it cost me, like I say, it cost me, areas of my career. It cost me, you know, relationships. It cost me friendships, various things that it, impacted mm-hmm. in negative ways. Mm-hmm. And, and everybody's health is different and everybody has different issues. And,
of course,
you know, I think I've mentioned my sister on this show before. My sister lives in Australia and she's, you know, had health issues her entire life. And, you know, she doesn't have, she did have both of her kidneys removed and I gave her one of mine 20 years ago. And, you know, that was, you know, it's amazing to think like it's been 20 years, but there's been so many other complications she's had to deal with since then. And the worst being a neurological disorder and having to give up her career as a teacher and, give up driving and, you know, it changed a lot. So even though I was dealing with the shit that I was the last few years, I didn't have to look too far to realize that, you know, I it could be a lot worse. You know, there's all kinds of people out there that could have things worse. So be grateful for what you do have. And like I say, when you do have issues, leave it.
My dad always said, if everyone put a pile of their problems in front, you would take your pile back pretty quickly.
That's a good saying.
Good saying.
You know, and I think that's true. And I think that's probably great for your mindset during all of this, is the ability to be in gratitude during such a tough time, at least in some aspects. At least in reflection.
For sure. Like I was, you know, and again, I'll credit you guys for, you know, helping me grow in that area with gratitude, because you guys speak about it a lot. And I think I've always been the person that's been grateful for, you know, I don't take the things, the opportunities and people, places, things in my life. I've never been one to take them for granted, but I think I've been that much more grateful in the last few years. And and I hope that just continues to grow, you know, within me. It's because there's a lot of things to be grateful for. And, you know, I wasn't as depressed and the anxiety that I was dealing with. I wasn't, how do I put this? I never thought, like, you know, oh, woe is me, and why is this happening to me, and, you know, what did I do to deserve this, or, you know, and for a long time I did. I actually thought, like, okay, this is my fate. I'm going to be a victim of COVID, not COVID directly, but because of, you know, the crap that was going on around me and with what I had, and thinking that things had spiraled and I had cancer or whatever. I was very accepting of the fact that this could be the end. You know, this is the end for me. I've had a couple of situations in the past in my life where I did face near-death situations, and I've realized in those situations how calm I was. You know, I did a lot of reflecting in the last few years on the life that I've led and the people I've crossed paths with, and the experiences and the places and the incredible animals that I've interacted with and all that stuff. And all I could think is, like, I've lived enough for 10 lives, you know, and hopefully I live a lot longer. I didn't ever had a death wish, but I did a lot of reflecting on all of the things I've experienced throughout the course of my life: family, friends, music, you know, animals and sports and all these incredible things that, you know, I just so grateful for. And if the time was coming, then so be it. I've got no regrets, and I don't. And I think that's a wonderful thing to be able to go through life and think to yourself, like, yeah, I don't have any major regrets. So it's, you know, yeah, very grateful for a lot of things and a lot of time spent reflecting, and I still will do that. But I think as well too, I've got my foot on the gas again, and I'm moving forward and, you know, taking on new challenges and looking forward to having a lot more opportunities for things to be grateful for in the future.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Can we jump back a little bit? I have a question that isn't intended for you to give an answer as an expert. It's from your experience, and forgive me if this is morbid or too personal, but how do you avoid going lower and lower? I mean, you talk sort of about that pivotal moment in where you're staring in the mirror and you say you need help. That can go a lot lower and lower and lower to the point where we're not having this conversation, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So in your experience, how do you apply the brakes when things chemically in your brain are just not where they need to be.
I think I touched on it briefly when I said it can always be worse, you know, and I would always remind myself of that. I've got every single day, it's again, stuff that we've all talked about. You guys have talked about on this show a number of times. I got a roof over my head. I got clothes on my back. I've got food in my belly. Those, and I've got family and friends, right? Like those staples in life, if you've got those, like there are so many people in this world that don't have a roof over their head, don't know where their next meal is coming from, don't have clean water, don't have a warm place to rest their head at night. And I would remind myself of that constantly. Like, I am extremely fortunate. You know, yeah, I've got issues, I've got problems, but it can be a hell of a lot worse. And I also think I was brought up thinking or believing, I guess, that, and I, you know, obviously you were touching on like where it can go a lot worse, as in suicide. Mm-hmm. And I never once had a thought about like life is not worth living. I've never, ever in my entire life had a suicidal thought. I talked to my therapist about this, where I had thoughts of like, well, if I'm in the field and a bear eats me, that's different. Or if I'm in the ocean or in Lake Erie and I go down this way, well, I'm going down doing something that I love.
Right.
And maybe this will be the day that Lake Erie swallows me whole. You know, I had those thoughts, but I didn't want to put myself in a position where I'm like, I'm going to let the lake take me, or let a bear take me, or let a chipmunk take me. I just
on your neck
or like, you know, a gaggle of geese. I mean, those guys are scary when they're
just pecking at you unmercifully.
But no, I had those thoughts of like, oh, what if today's the day? Well, maybe I'd be better off if, you know, but I'm not going to like,
right.
I was never like, okay, I'm going to put myself in this situation so this happens, or I'm going to do something drastic, as in taking my own life. I never once had those thoughts, you know? And honestly, when I had my cat, when Ollie was still alive, I was like, I got to take care of you. I got to take care of him.
Right.
And my nephew is halfway around the world in Australia, but I would think about him all the time. And like, I know how much my nephew loves me and how much I love him. And I want to be that cool uncle for him when he's 20 and when he's 30 and 40, and not just when he's 11, you know, like,
yeah, right.
So those kind of things would always enter my head. And I've always just, you know, I know people that have committed suicide. I know people I grew up with, you know, that went to school with and things like that. And the horrible aftermath, the horrible trail that can leave behind for family and friends. And I've always thought it was, and I don't want to get into trouble by saying this, but I always thought it was like a selfish act, you know, and we can never put ourselves in somebody else's shoes. But I've always just thought there's always some way out somewhere, somehow, that somebody can help you. So I never went down that path.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I never would want to put people through something like that, because I wanted to, you know, I couldn't handle what I was dealt in life. Like I say, I've always felt that it could be a lot worse, you know, when you've got your own place and you can afford to feed yourself and stay warm at night, life's not that bad.
Yeah. It's stripped back. It makes things very raw. Aaron, I'm on my second read through of Man's Search for Meaning. Mm-hmm. And I just can't help but continuing to think of those concepts. Like, literally everything can be stripped away from you except mm-hmm. how you choose to think.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a good book. It's really just a long essay with two parts, but I don't know, Dave, if you've had the pleasure of reading that.
I haven't, no.
You should read it. Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. Very good book. And it's kind of, that's kind of the concept. He's a Holocaust survivor and everything's taken from him, his family, his clothes, jewelry, put in striped prison striped prison suit, shaved head, and, you know, in an effort to dehumanize everyone. So literally everything's stripped, but the point of the book is the one thing they couldn't take was how he chose to think, which I think is a very powerful concept.
That's huge, yeah. Huge, yeah. Like you say, it's...
Yeah, we need a part two to talk photography.
Yeah, well, let's... well, Dave just... We'll switch gears a bit here. So you're on the up, right? Things are going a lot better now. How did it feel to just do your last Expedia assignment? That, to me, seems kind of just like you're coming home, you're homecoming after all this.
It was.
That's fair to say.
Back in the subarctic and the cold, the things that I love, and doing something that I love. Was a good group of people being able to share.
Yeah, what were you doing? Tell us. I know.
So, I went up to Yellowknife. The main part of the assignment was to photograph the Northern Lights. I was brought up as, and using air quotes now, the talent.
And, by Expedia, right?
By Expedia, yeah. And which was an awesome client to pick up. They brought 10 journalists in, five from the States and five from Canada, as their guests. And I was there to sort of give like a bit of a mini workshop on how to photograph Aurora and, photograph in the snow and, you know, sort of share my experience and then help them in the field. And, you know, we did some one-on-one stuff, whether it was, you know, at the hotel or, you know, just chatting over dinners, things like that. And these people put their skills to use as journalists and were able to come away with some really stunning photographs. They all wrote, you know, articles on their experience and, and I had to do a couple of videos for Expedia for social and their network and a handful of photos for a press release and everything like that. So, because Expedia is promoting, Northern Lights tourism this year, with this being, you know, perhaps the best year in decades to witness one of the seven natural wonders of the world. Yeah, an aurora. With solar activity and everything, it's just...
Did you say one of the natural seven wonders of the world? Is that what you said?
Natural seven wonders of the world.
What are the other six? I didn't even know this was a thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You have to look it up. I won't be able to get them all. I know the Great Barrier Reef is one. Great Barrier Reef, Aurora.
Oh, so, okay. I thought it was more like phenomena.
No. Like just things in nature that are...
Okay, it's fair.
Niagara Falls is one, I believe.
Yeah.
The Canadian side.
I want to say, I think I've seen
Grand Canyon, Great Barrier Reef, Mount Everest, Victoria Falls, Paracutin, Mexico, Aurora Borealis, and Harbor of Rio de Janeiro.
I didn't know this. I just thought there was like the ancient wonders and people are probably saying,
learn something new today.
You didn't know this? I don't know a lot of things. So,
well, and if you want to see Aurora, this is the year to do it, I guess. I mean, it's just one of those years where the activity is, you know, peaking more than normal. So you have a better opportunity at seeing the Northern Lights, and when you do that activity might be a little bit more spectacular than, times in the past. So
cool.
Expedia is promoting that and their travel and everything. So it was a real amazing opportunity to get a chance to be brought up there with them and
in good health too.
And in good health. And yeah, like I got to do all the things that I normally would have done. Like I went tubing and
right.
Went
so do you feel like shooting and do you feel like you're almost 10 years younger because the spark in terms of recovery has been so abrupt? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, it absolutely does. I do. I feel like, I feel
I'm really, 25.
Like, yeah. I doing all that, like snowshoeing, dog sledding, being under the northern lights in the cold air that I love it. I thrive in it. And I felt so alive. And coming back from that, and then the next basically jumped right into NHL All-Star weekend shortly after. And right. being out on my skates with my camera and, cool. you know, like basically the top hockey players in the world, being out on the ice with them and skating with guys like Sidney Crosby and Connor Bedard and Connor McDavid. And like that made me again feel so alive and just that energy of being out there with them and being on my skates. And there's a mascot game. All the mascots play on the ice too after the skills. And I photographed that on my skates. And that is like, it's one of the most fun things I get to do annually. And I was just like a kid again. Like you couldn't get the smile off of my face. I was huffing and puffing because I'm not in the greatest shape, but I did. I felt like I was, you know, probably more than 10 years younger again.
That's
so
great.
It's been awesome. You know, yeah, all my assignments in the last month and a half or so were phenomenal, and I've got some more coming up. And
yeah, you're heading up to the Manitoba, aren't you?
I am. I'm up going north. To meet my boys from Discover Churchill again. And yeah, go do more Aurora photography and whatever wildlife we can find.
And you're offering a workshop, right, in August? Is that right? If people are interested in checking that out? A
photo tour. There will be workshop elements involved, photo tour. But I'm not calling it a workshop. But yeah, there will be added value that I'm going to bring to the table. My buddy Alex DeVries has been very kind to offer me his gallery space so I can do a little bit of a workshop presentation. And Polar Bears International as well, being a photo ambassador with them, I've called in a favor to have an evening at PBI House, cool. where one of the scientists or their representatives will speak to our group on about polar bear science and what Polar Bears International are doing and the you know, the bears in the air in the region and the region itself. And then we'll have the opportunity to photograph belugas
very cool.
going out in the zodiac. And then summer bears.
How do you shoot those now that you can't go in the water? Just a GoPro?
I disguise myself as a whale. I have a costume because I'm so fat now. they just accept me as one of their own.
Nice. Just a cauliflower tape to your head for the big melon.
I actually have a onesie that I put on. So, from the Zodiac, you can still put your camera in the water, you know, so I'm going to be bringing my water housing and,
cool.
Be able to get under the water that way. So, but yeah, GoPros and different things like that. So, belugas, bears, borealis, because you'll have awesome. Summer bears. So we'll spend some time on the trails and the 4x4s and looking for whatever wildlife on land as well. And then at night in the evenings, Aurora. So, I mean, it's just a small group. It's just myself and four people. There's still three spots that are open. I haven't even Ooh. Actually made this public yet. So,
okay.
This is kind of the first people are really going to hear about it. So
people should reach out to you directly then. They shouldn't go to a link or anything?
Correct. Right now, I'm going to have it up on my site soon, but okay. reach out to me directly. Even if it was on my site at this point, I'm going to have something prepared by the end of the week that I'm going to be sending out to people. Because I've got people who have been interested for some time about doing a tour with me. So I'm reaching out to those people first, people on my email list before I sort of take it to social. So by the time this will be like 5 days before this is up or longer.
This will be, today will be that you're listening to this is March 11th. So Monday, March 11th.
Okay. So yeah. So hopefully by this time next week, I have everything.
It's weird. We're in the future, but we're not in the future. It's kind of like this whole Inception type thing.
Exactly. It's like if I call my sister in Australia, she's in the future. Yeah, but she's not.
You can ask for the lottery numbers for the next
Lottery numbers, right.
Exactly.
So that's I'm really excited about it because this is my first tour that I've done on my own. I've guested before, but I've never done my own tours. And it's been something I've been talking about for a few years.
Cool.
Wasn't in the right space to be able to do that the last few years, as we've just discussed for a while. And now that I am, I'm excited to move forward with that. And then moving forward in about a year from now, looking to do this another small tour with a group of three or four for Polar Bear Denning back in Churchill. So the moms and cubs emerging from their den. And then if we're lucky at night to have some aurora, then shooting the northern lights as well. So yeah, finally taking the plunge in, you know, doing a few of these things that I've spoken about and wanted to do for some time, but just wasn't able to.
Very cool, man.
Good for you, man.
Thank you.
Well, this has been a different conversation than the usual episodes with Dave Sanford, and I'm not complaining at all. I again want to say how much myself and Aaron, I'm sure, and our listeners appreciate your honesty, and it's not easy to do what you just did for an hour and a half, talk about the lows, the lowest of lows. But I think we all enjoy hearing a story of people who have been at the bottom and have found the tools and a way to pick themselves back up. I think that's something to be celebrated. And I think it's something that fuels inspiration for people who are struggling to maybe, you know, worse degree or less degree than you did. It's all relative, right?
Yeah.
But I think, you know, your story, if anything, is a testament to resilience and choosing to build resilience and develop tools that help you not just cope with life better, but enjoy life, be more creative, be a better photographer, have more energy, and so that you can show up as your best for yourself and those around you. So thanks again, man. Appreciate it. You're welcome back anytime. And, thank you, Aaron, as well, for your insightful questions as well. And
I'm glad
I was able to let you get a word in because I had so many notes. I consciously remind myself, we got to let Aaron, we got to let the counselor in him out.
It's okay. The counselor's job is to listen.
Hey, it's very true.
But I feel like I did a lot of talking over this episode.
That's great.
I appreciate both of you giving me the opportunity to share my story. Like we're saying, if this gets through to one person and helps them in any way, shape, or form, then it's always worse coming on here and talking to you guys. I love talking to both of you guys. But if we can do something while we're talking and it helps somebody, then that makes it that much more worthwhile.
Absolutely.
You know, and hey, you know, like I say, that's what I've enjoyed. I know a lot of episodes in the past, and I've got a lot of catching up to do, but it's the photographer mindset, and this, we definitely talked a lot about mindset in this episode.
I think mostly that's okay.
Yeah.
It's all related.
So
that's fine. Yeah.
A well-known one too.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's also part of the point that, people who may idolize you or look up to you, it's not all great all the time, right? So
no, it's not. I mean, we all, no matter, yeah, I mean, professional hockey players, professional golfers don't step out onto the ice or the green and, you know, be the stars that they are. There's so much work that goes on behind the scenes, right? And it's no different with photography or whatever it is in life, or just life in general. Like, you always have to do a lot of work behind the scenes. And again, like we said, with things like social media, you know, and the you're only seeing what's on the surface. We're only putting out there what we want to put out there. It's not often people share this kind of stuff, and I don't want it to dominate my social feeds and my conversations and things like that, but I know I do realize that there's a time and a place, and that people can learn from my experience, and it can better help them in their own experience, and And yeah, just to remember that, yeah, it's not always what you see on the surface. There's a lot of dirt underneath that surface sometimes.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Dave Sanford, thanks very much for your time, buddy. Until next time, guys.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.